You're listening to the Shared Security Show, exploring the trust you put in people and technology with your hosts, Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 249 of the Shared Security Show. And joining me this week, back from the dead, is Kevin Johnson.
From the dead?
Welcome back. Well,
you died?
You pretty much were dead to us, Kevin.
I was dead too.
But now you're back.
Well, and the best part is I go back on the road Sunday.
Yeah, I know. I know. But we're also joined by very special guests. Rafalos from the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.
One of the most popular
security podcasts out there.
Aww.
And we don't know why. No.
We don't know why.
It's inexplicable. Nobody understands.
I love the fact that the way Tom says your name sounds like it's one word.
Right.
Rafalos.
Yeah, he's been doing that since we've met.
Rafalos. You guys remember, Rafalos. I don't know if you all, can you remember Weebelows?
They wobble, but they don't fall down?
Exactly, right? That is what I think of every single time he says your name.
Wow, man.
It just all blends together.
Hey, you've known me long enough. Sometimes I wobble, but I don't fall down.
I've never seen you fall down, so that's accurate. But I have absolutely seen you wobble.
What is going on? What kind of podcast is this?
What is that TikTok sound that you always hear where it's the little kids like, when I grow up, I want to be a marshmallow and wobble round. Have you not heard that one? Oh, man.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I want to know the context that this kid said this, right? Like, okay. We probably have important topics.
So, we have very serious topics to talk about. That's why Raph is on today. So,
you picked the wrong guest.
Well, we actually decided not to talk about the election stuff this week. We're actually going to reserve that for when we're a little bit closer to the midterms. So we don't have to talk politics on this show, but we do get to talk about
politics on this show. What are you
talking
about?
True. We never talk about politics. Yes, at least you don't, Kevin.
Ever.
This is true.
I'm not a political person.
No, you're not. You have no opinions at all.
No.
But we do have a couple things we did want to talk about since Raph is here. And I know this topic in particular is, I'd say, pretty heated in the community right now around CISOs going to jail because of the Uber breach and Joe Sullivan, the former CISO, getting the conviction, and lots of drama going on around that. So I wanted to kind of open that up. We talked a little bit about this on one of the shows a couple weeks ago, but Raph, I'd really like to get your opinion because you talk to CISOs all the time.
Actually,
on your
Raph
show,
has been arrested for being a CISO. That is just
I mean, yeah. There is that.
That has never happened. If I was going to impersonate somebody, that would not be a CISO. Okay?
No, definitely not. That way. Yeah, it is a bad time for CISOs.
Famous soccer player, or I don't know. I don't think you pass for anything else. But anyway. Wow. Yes.
Sports reference.
Where do we start? I know.
Yeah. Well, where do we start? I'll start it on this. I have seen a very interesting, and I'll just couch it as interesting. I'll give you my opinions later, but I've seen a very interesting swell of support for Joe and the situation at hand. Lots of really important people, lots of very, very big names in the security community talking about how bad and how unfair and all that. And that's been interesting to read.
They're wrong. and that's not true. That's an exaggerated response. I don't want to say they're wrong. I think most of the people I've seen that are presenting themselves as, oh my God, this is awful. All CISOs are going to go to jail. Joe is a great guy and we support him. I think that most of them are approaching it from the wrong perspective. And I want to be very clear. I'm not saying Joe's not a great guy. I'm not saying that Joe shouldn't be supported. I'm saying what I have read is that the majority of the people are ignoring what I believe is the key reason he was punished. And that is there was an active investigation and he actively lied to the investigators. But my point is, if that is true, and my understanding is it is, right? That is a reason to get punished. You're not punished because you're a CISO. You are being punished because you lied in an active investigation that you were basically under oath for. My point is, people are presenting the, oh, woe is Joe, and I did say it that way on purpose, as if, oh, the poor CISO is a scapegoat and the CEO did bad stuff and Joe's taking the fall for it and that's awful. And if that was all that was going on, I would agree 100% with that idea. The CISO taking the fall for the CEO is a shit job and that's bad. But if the statement is accurate that Joe actively, knowingly lied to investigators during an investigation, throw the book at it. Right. So I'm not saying which way I agree with. I'm saying that both of those statements are true. If he was scapegoat, that's bad. If he lied to investigators, that's bad.
There was that whole thing of like, hey, I know you guys hacked us and stole a bunch of stuff. Would you mind signing this NDA so I can pay you to go away quietly? I mean,
but having argued with that, I would agree with you. That's bad. And I would look at that and it would be against my morals.
That's like ethically messed. That's seriously ethically messed up. And by the way, nobody disputes that was his idea to do.
Okay. Well, nope. I've seen people dispute that. I've seen.
Oh, really? Okay.
That it was the firm's attorney's
idea. The attorney.
Idea
to do it. Yeah.
And I don't know which one's true because you're absolutely right.
Okay.
99% of the people talking about it are saying it was his idea. I've seen where he has said it was his idea. Right. So, But if you argue the idea of, well, the attorney reviewed it and the attorney said this is the right thing to do, I could hear a reasonable answer of, I have a fiduciary responsibility to follow the advice of my attorney, right? I disagree with that because he was an attorney himself and he should know better and blah, blah, blah. That's me, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking. My big core problem here is he lied to investigators in an active investigation. None of the rest of it matters. That was punished. He was punished for lying to investigators. It doesn't matter. Like, look, if you break into a building and steal stuff, and then you're under oath and you lie under oath and you get penalized for lying under oath, it does not matter why you were under oath, right? Hmm. It doesn't matter the steps that took you there. And that's correct. What I think the problem is with all the influencers who are complaining about this is that they're focusing on the activities before the lying and acting like, oh, well, and to not talk about politics, Bill Clinton under oath lying about what he happened in the Oval Office, right? It was bad that he lied. He was punished for lying. We can argue he shouldn't have been under oath for that. He should not have been investigated for that. That's a valid argument, but it doesn't change the fact that correct. This has no impact on any other CISO as long as they don't lie.
So this is, so this is where, this is where I think my head's at too, Kevin. And we don't often agree, but when we do it violently. I'm not an attorney. I don't purport to know every angle and everything that's been unpublished and that's happened in the case. Lots of people have claimed to know, have some critical insights, know things that we don't. Okay, fine. What I will say is a lot I can hold based on the analysis that I have seen and that I was able to do, and I'll couch it that way. I can hold two facts in my head at the same time. One, don't lie. Like lying to somebody under oath, bad. Also, like I got to say, his leadership staff, what a bunch of people that deserve to be run over by water buffaloes. Like if there's a, you know, if there's a, if there's, you know, if there's a nicer group of people that I wish were on the Titanic, man,
you know, this was Uber back then though. Yeah.
This, it was them back then. Culture. You're right. That, I mean, I wonder how much of that has changed, by the way, but that, I mean, that was a well-known, crazy, toxic culture, well-established, had been written about previously. And look, the guy, I don't know him. I couldn't point him out in a lineup. I know him by reputation. Yeah. He had a great reputation before he joined, and now he's potentially going to sit in jail. So something happened. I also know that the way the law works in this country and in probably most other places, it comes down to technicalities and how you say things and when you say something and what you say and all that. And it can be like the difference between guilty and not guilty. And like that we're going to argue over the definition of the word is, right? Like, okay. But I think fundamentally, does this change anything for the average chief information security officer out there? I think that they have to evaluate the relationship they have with their leadership team and where they fit. Because if the S in your title stands for scapegoat, you're in the wrong place and make a run for it, right? If you're not situationally aware enough about what your leadership's intentions are for your role, then you're probably not a very good CISO, okay? And you can, I mean, you can argue about this, but most companies have a culture that gets pretty easy to read once, even if it's happening after you've joined. You're like, oh man, I did not sign up for this. And I get it. We all have to feed families. We all, like, not everybody has the luxury of being like, I'm not in for this. I'm out.
No, wait. I'm going to stop you right there and disagree.
All right.
You are absolutely correct that not everybody in the world has the possibility of saying, what's this? I'm out.
Yep.
But I believe that if you're at the point in your career where you are actually a CISO.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
You don't you're have right. the ability to say, what's this? I'm out of here. You've screwed up your life.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
that's not an entry level job, no matter what the job postings will tell you.
Exactly.
That's a whole other problem.
That's a whole, right. So that's an entirely different podcast, but I think it changes. Like, lots of company officers carry liability insurance, right? Yep. And CISOs, if you're going to be a company officer and you don't carry liability insurance, that, like, well, you haven't been paying attention. I think this is
out that liability insurance won't cover you if you lie.
Also true. right. There's like this whole willful negligence clause in there. But where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. So I think where this industry is starting to finally grow up into is, like, accountability is a real thing, right? Like, this is not a job where, and this is how my podcast started. Dave Kennedy and I started having a debate on whether CISOs are best served coming up through the ranks or down from the business. I think that this will probably make that debate a little hotter again, mainly because I think people that do not understand the nature of the job they are getting into, AKA generally, this is not a technical role. You're a politician with some technical background, and you've got a lot of responsibilities that absolutely are not in the technical realm, right? In tiny companies, maybe, but in most big ones, that is absolutely not your jam. So you have to learn the nature of how to be a executive, how to carry yours, how to read contracts, how to negotiate your role, have an insurance, know when your corporate attorney says lie on the stand, you should go, that's probably a bad idea. And there will be consequences. Like, that, I'm not saying that's what happened, but I'm pointing out an obviously bad example, right? So I think this further complicates the role of the chief information security officer, particularly as it's labeled in these other companies, because you have to now, you can't be that keyboard cowboy that's like, hey, all right, I'm now the CISO. Because you are out of your depth and you will be fed to the sharks because you won't know that you're being fed to the sharks. That's it. That's my rant.
Plus the whole thing of, I mean, it's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Like, well, I'll lie and you know, potentially go to jail. But if I don't, if I try to cover it up, right, I'll still be fired either way, right? Because CISOs will get blamed.
I will take fired over jail.
Yes.
I will always take fired over jail. In my opinion, more people should be Mudge and less people should be Joe.
Ooh.
I do not disagree with this.
Yeah.
Interesting. I, and you know what? Look, it's real easy for the three of us to sit here and say, I wouldn't lie. I'd
do right. We're not CISOs. Yeah.
We're not CISOs. I would like to believe that my job history has proven that I won't lie and I'll do the right thing. And I would like to believe that two of you are in the same boat. It's easy for us. But damn it, man. Stop defending people that do bad things because you liked them at a past time. And that's what I see a lot of people doing, right? Man, he was such a great guy when I worked with him. He couldn't have done
what happened?
You know what? That's funny because they said the same thing about Dahmer.
But, right, I was going to say, you do beat me to it.
Dahmer was a great dude. Yeah.
This is a terrible comparison, but like, wow, that guy was so nice and quiet. Who knew that he was eating people in his basement?
I think it's not a bad
I'm not sure how we got there, Kevin, but
that'll be an edit. You were going there too.
That's a great segment or segue into ISC squared.
Wow. You want your organization to be secure and compliant and to have a healthy culture, but your employees' lack of awareness makes you vulnerable to data theft, fraud, and compliance penalties. It's frustrating that the boring static training content that's being used today has failed to improve employees' ability to defend against cyber attacks. At ClickArmor, we know that without using gamification, it's extremely hard to get staff to understand how to avoid threats. Our gamified simulations and challenges have provided a 50% average improvement in thousands of employees' ability to spot phishing threats. Go to clickarmor.ca/sharedsecurity to get your free gamified phishing assessment for up to 500 employees. You'll see quickly how gamified simulations can help your team be more resilient and compliant and help avoid costly ransomware and fraud incidents. Let ClickArmor help you go from being an underappreciated, stressed out fall guy to being an innovative leader who's the catalyst for greater productivity in your organization.
ISC squared segment, if I may, I think this is a really, really simple segment. ISC squared has new bylaws that they've proposed. Say no. Say no now. Say no loudly. Go and say no every place you can. Oh my God, what is wrong with you drug-addled people who are voting yes? There's my answer to the ISC squared.
I didn't have enough chance to go read. What's the proposal?
So the proposal is to change every single thing about it in a bad way.
That sounds exactly like ISC, but that sounds like ISC squared.
So here's the summary for you both, but also for our audience that may not know what we're talking about. So ISC squared is the certification organization known for the CISSP or CISP, if you however you want to pronounce it in the community.
CISP.
I've heard CISP a lot lately, and I'm like
CISP, right? Which for a long time is kind of I hate to say the standard certification, right? But
for people outside the industry, especially, they have done a good job of convincing people it is the certification to do.
Yes. So love them or hate them, they have a lot of members worldwide. Many people in the community have a CISSP or some form of an ISC squared certification, but essentially they are changing their bylaws. And to summarize it, essentially, the first point is board elections will only have as many candidates as there are openings. So that's the first change. The second is write-in votes shall be banned. So if you know someone who would be awesome on the board of directors, they now need a support of 1% of the membership. So that's now approximately 1,500 people. So can you get 1,500 people to sign a petition? That's a lot of people.
Concerned about that, but I agree with that one. But let's talk.
The third one is the ethics committee will be disbanded, and then board members will be the only members allowed. Yeah, the ethics committee will be disbanded. And the board members will be the only members allowed to serve on standing committees. So that's the other.
This sounds like a consolidation of power.
Yes, so, exactly.
A way for people to not get voted out in a consolidation of power. Yeah.
Before you go there, if I may, and I want to be very clear, I do not want anything about to come out of my mouth to imply that I am defending ISC squared and saying that you should vote yes, because the answer is no. They have come back out and given more information. And let me be very clear. I will point out that any time that you have to clarify your point where you are restructuring your entire organization and you have to re-clarify your point over and over and over again, it just sounds like you're lying. I'm not saying you're lying. I am saying you're lying. But that's how it comes across. But they have clarified that, one, the ethics board is not being disbanded. They are disbanding the way they run it now, where it is a part of the board, and actually making it part of the association, where it will be a standing committee. And their claim is that that makes it better for the membership to get, because one of the problems they have, and I won't disagree with this, they suck at enforcing their ethics. We know lots of people who I would not in any way consider ethical or as following the canon.
Security researchers.
Swear, right? For example, people like Kevin Mitnick, right?
here we go.
But they're claiming.
I mean, so obvious things are obvious.
Their ethics board has never done a good job of enforcing the ethics, and they are claiming that by disbanding the current one and changing it to this other version, somehow magically that will make their ethics better. So I want to be clear on that. The other thing that I didn't hear you say, the core thing they are trying to move to
is advocacy.
Yeah. They are saying that it is more important for them to be advocates for the cybersecurity community to the world, politicians, things like this. I think you'll know the word lobbyist.
Yeah, they want to be a lobbyist organization.
They want to become a lobbyist organization is what it reads like. So my issue is, and again, let's talk about lying. they have a person who is on the board of directors right now. I'm blanking on the name. Zach Tudor, who posted on LinkedIn why you should vote yes, ISC squared bylaws. He's wrong. You should not vote yes. And he actually talks about the fact that one of the things is this advocacy thing. What I love is it's not a new mission statement. It is a refreshed, and he has refreshed in all capital letters.
So you know it's important.
You know what? New Coke was refreshed flavor. And
everyone hated it.
Yeah. Here's the issue with this. Every part of this change appears to remove accountability from the members, right? So the members are, it's less able to hold them accountable. I am not going to stand here and say that that is what they are doing. But I will say that an organization as large as ISC squared, who has as many paid people staffing their organization, the fact that the vast majority of the purpose of the organization is marketing and advocacy and promotion, if they are this shitty at explaining what they want the bylaws to do, then I'm not voting yes to that, right? It's that simple. If you can't explain to smart people, and I've listened to a ton of smart people because I'm not one, who have analyzed these changes, have read these changes and come back and said, this isn't the right thing. Even if it is the right thing, let's say it is. Let's say we're all wrong. That means you suck at communication, which also means you shouldn't be the advocacy organization for cybersecurity. I will argue that a lot of people have said, you know what? ISC squared has done a lot for the industry and this bylaws are bad. I disagree with the first half of that. I don't believe ISC squared has done a lot for our industry. I think ISC squared has done a lot for ISC squared.
As somebody that has never had a CISP, had absolutely no desire to go get a CISP, and as you, I know lots and lots of people in that organization. I know some in the leadership buckets. I know of them. I know them. They are, I would say, as good or bad. I guess the saving grace here is at least they're not the EH Council.
Yes.
I actually think that they are quickly moving to a point where I would prefer
have
an EC Council.
Wow. Certain.
Oh, God.
That's pretty bad.
Yes, it is. And it's bad on them. And that is an exaggeration. Look, here's my point. ISC squared has a, and I've argued this with Nathan. Nathan, one of our principal consultants here, when he has had his CIS for a couple of years, and he is saying, well, maybe it's not as bad. Maybe it's not what we're seeing. Maybe, right? Maybe they're not communicating it well. And here's my point. ISC squared has a history of alienating the industry. They have a history of doing things against what the membership as a whole has asked for. What they should be doing right now is trying to rebuild their relationship with members, not trying to change the organization into, and possibly part of these bylaw changes are required for that, right? The question is, how are they going to fix this?
I'm curious because if this passes, so say this passes, all right, just hypothetically, say it passes and you violently disagree with it. I'm not involved and I could care less, but anytime you put the word advocacy, AKA lobbying, in front of a group that that would make me uncomfortable. We don't need any more lobbyists. We really, really don't. We've got enough cybersecurity lobbyists. They
have not referred to themselves as lobbyists.
They yeah, are but
an advocacy group, but that is
yeah, that's a lobbyist. That's literally the same thing. Yeah. In aspirations, but do people if this stuff passes and people disagree, the people that disagree with it, do they disassociate? Do they just go along with it? Like what's the outcome? I'm curious because
the outcome,
they're rolling some dice here.
You vote, right? And then after you vote, I'll be blunt. If they pass these bylaws, I expect to see a large number of the people who have said, I'm done, lapsing their cert. I won't be lapsing my cert. I can't. And this is one of the problems, in my opinion, with the industry, is that for me, I have to maintain my cert. And the reason I have to maintain my cert is I have customers that require the certification as part of the contract for the work we do. Even though every single person listening to this podcast knows the certification has nothing to do with what I do for a living. So I will be maintaining my cert no matter what. For that reason, so I can't move to Canada because my opponent got elected, right?
Right.
I don't expect those requirements to change. I will say I am working on something that I've been working on for a while now, not to compete with ISC squared, but to help the industry. And this has lit a fire under a number of people who are planning on helping me.
That's the problem with like the fact that the ISC square thing has become essentially a monopoly they're like the gatekeepers. They did that well, right? They turned the CISSP into a must have for certain contracts and anything entry level. Like if you want to be like, Tom, I don't know about you, but I don't think I've met anybody in the last 5 years that's asked me if I've had SSP. It just based on what I do, it wouldn't matter the slightest. So I could give a patoot. So but there's a lot of people that apply for jobs that says, hey, you have to have a CISSP because this has become the gold standard. even if it's gold plated and slightly tarnished, lead underneath, it's it has become so. It's interesting because you don't seem to have another option. So they are trending. They have built, at the risk of making this political, they have built what everything seems to trend to these days is, I've got power. I'm going to keep it. I'm going to do what I want. And you can't leave. And if you try to stop me, I'm going to make it impossible for you to stop me.
Yeah.
right? You're going to, like, the fact that, I mean, look, on the surface, to have 15, like 1% sounds like a reasonable number. Like, why would we want 75 candidates? Because nobody know. It's like voting, you know, in your local districts. Like, nobody knows who these candidates are. Nobody knows who the 40th district agriculture commissioner is. Like, what? Like, I don't know. I don't even know these people. I can't even Google them because all they have is, like, they don't even have a picture. Like, what is going on here? So to go, like, but if they're going to do that, they have to provide, in order to make, if there was genuine desire to improve, if you're going to say you have to require 1%, then they have to provide a platform to access the whole to get that 1%, right? So there would have to be a all members blast. Here are the candidates that are trying to get a write-in. Here are their platforms. Here's what they stand for. Here's their picture. Here's their LinkedIn profile. If you would like to support them, click here to support. Like, if they're not going to do that, they can make people individually try to go, you know, tin cup out to 15,000 people who they may or may not know. Get out of here. That's a dumb, like, that is so transparently stupid. And that is so transparently to keep people from getting on the ballot. It's ridiculous. Like, if you don't provide, I don't know. The answer is I don't know if they do. But if they don't, then you people should be ashamed of yourselves, because that is so blatantly transparent. Like, anybody can see through that. And frankly, at this point, if they do, they probably do know that. If that is the case, big caveat. And that would just kind of speak to, like, yeah, they probably don't care. Like, hey, I'm going to change this. It's going to give me more power. It's going to make it harder for somebody else to vote. Guess what, people? We don't care. And you can do nothing about it because we're the standard. That was the problem that we ran into. Nobody, there were no competing other types of certs. Where the heck is SANS in all this? Why isn't there a competitive SANS cert? Come on. Those people take obscene amounts of money from you know, those of us that go to their to go conferences and attend their things. Why isn't there a competing SANS cert?
There is a competing SANS cert for the CISP. It's called the
There GSEC. Is?
Yeah.
Why haven't I ever heard of this?
Me about SANS certs. I haven't been a SANS instructor involved in that organization other than to complain about their price increases for almost a decade.
Right.
So let's be blunt. In my opinion, Alan Paller and SANS are one of the reasons ISC Squared has as much power as they do. Because SANS and ISC Squared both lobbied for the 8570 rule to go into place. Both of them, and I'm not saying they were wrong to do that. I'm just saying that those two powerhouses of the industry, whether we like it or not, right, those two organizations pushed the DoD to pass 8570, to put 8570 in the rules, and 8570 has driven what, and by the way, EC Council was just as much a part of that, and I believe you are known by your peers, right? but 8570 went into place. And 8570 has driven, if you talk to SHRM, the Society of HR Managers, they reference the fact that 8570 is one of the reasons that the CISSP or the CEH or GX certifications are often requirements for industry. Because if it's good enough, if it's military grade, we might as well use it. So, yeah, we can rant about how the lobbyists have fucked us because they pushed forward profit margins over actually testing skills.
Kevin, you've now triggered my brain into my big rant about everything about our industry is we're so excited to keep selling people, like, we're big pharma. We're so excited to keep selling people aspirin. Meanwhile, we don't really care if they're dying. We just want to make sure that they keep buying the aspirin while they're comfortable while they're dying. Yeah. Like, we don't care that companies get hacked. Realistically, if you look at the industry, right? Like, if I'm just completely cynical for a second, this industry does not care as long as profits can be made.
As a whole,
that's it. The industry as a whole, right? Broadly speaking,
right now,
the royal we.
Ideas is goal is to put ourselves out of business. If we do our job right, you won't need us.
Right.
And I know that Bishop Fox is in the same boat. That Bishop Fox attempts to give, and I can give you a list of companies, they're on my website, that their goal is to educate their customers and help them be better, even if it means less revenue in the long run, right?
Yeah, because we're actually this is
wants profits.
Yeah, well, look, there's companies, there are individuals that want to drive us that way. Some of those individuals end up running companies. Vinny's a great example of it. Kevin, you're another great example of it, that have strong, we'll call it a moral compass in this, right? We actually want the patient to survive. We want profitability, but at the same time, we're not willing to put the broad, industries at risk just because it would make us fatter, happier, richer. But I think as a whole, the royal everybody we in this industry in cybersecurity, like, you've got your everything from the threat researcher community, which I'm sure will be unhappy with me for saying this, but frankly, they're out for their own profit. The companies that profit off of those people, the companies that sell the technology to those people, the companies that consult, like I have in my 25 years, I have both worked for and worked against and bought from companies that you can absolutely be certain just like their whole point is to sell you the next consulting engagement and make sure you buy the next shiny thing that they're selling. That's it. That's
I'm
the end.
I'm going to say one thing about that. And then I'm sure that Tom's like, hey guys, we got to wrap this up soon. But I think a great example of that is the fact that we have a threat hunting consulting industry. And if you can tell me how, as a consultant threat hunter who is going to an organization that you have never seen before, never talked to before, never worked in, and yet you claim that somehow you are going to effectively show them what isn't normal on their network. And I'm not talking about, oh, here's IOCs that I read on Google and Slack and whatever. I'm talking about actually evaluating the threats to that organization with the day you step into an organization for a month-long engagement, you're full of it.
Well, those things are not – in legit cases, those would be teaching people to fish rather than fishing for them.
Yeah, but that's not what the vast
majority
of organizations do.
Yeah, I know.
They sell you an ongoing subscription where they will do the threat hunting on a network they don't understand.
Look at all these new podcast topics I just got. This is amazing. Yeah. Thank you, Kevin.
So, I think you can affectionately title this one "How to Be Unpopular in InfoSec."
Man, maybe that will be the title.
I'm cool with that. I haven't been popular since elementary school.
Wow, you were popular at some point?
No. I just know elementary school was the first time I had a chance to be popular.
And you blew it. I know. Man. Well, let's wrap things up. But awesome discussion, guys. This was really good. I want Raf to have an opportunity to plug his podcast because he does talk about these topics, similar topics, of course, on his show. So where can listeners find out more about your show, Raf?
Two places. You can just simply put "Down the Security Rabbit Hole" in the Googles and they will point you to the way. The RSS feed is, you can find it that way, or FTWR, follow the white rabbit, libsyn.com. Or you can type in "Down the Security Rabbit Hole" on LinkedIn, which is where we do a lot of stuff too. So, you guys are slightly older than my show, right?
A little bit. Yeah. A little over 13 years.
So we're, this is my 12th. Wow. That's kind of awesome. It's been a hot minute.
You started "Down the Rabbit Hole" about the same time I started "Secure Ideas."
Yeah, it was 2011. I know the exact date because it was exactly a week before CrowdStrike was founded. Adam and I just had this conversation at Falcon. It was almost exactly a week. Nice. So I'm older than my podcast is older than one of the most successful cybersecurity companies in the world. I clearly did something wrong there. I won the longevity war. Yes. Yeah, but thanks, man.
This is awesome.
Good having you guys on. We gotta like do these reciprocal shows every once in a while.
We'll cross the streams again, yes.
Yeah, across the God. Where did that
that was Paul.com.
Yeah, was that Paul?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be on his show in a day. A bit.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Well, it's not his show anymore.
For work. Yeah. Well, for work though.
Yes.
For whatever that show is now.
That's right. Security Weekly.
Yeah.
Security Weekly.
All right, guys. Well, thank you very much. For all our listeners, we'll talk to you all again next week. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app, or leave us a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the show, visit our website, sharedsecurity.net, for all show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter at SharedSec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another episode of the Shared Security Show.